I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Talking about the standout moments, performers, and what have you, and I just catch up a couple of bits and pieces. In part two, I'm going to do the transfers, the Kylian Mbappe stuff, which has been... I don't think it's been... It's been publicly killed, but not as publicly killed, I think, as, you know, it's rubbish, but we'll talk about it. Talk about Lavia and about Liverpool's defence as well, which continues to be a big question. Right. First off, before we dive into the game, Jordan Henderson, since the last podcast, finally confirmed to not be a Liverpool player anymore. Sam, I've not really spoken to you about it. It's a shame for me, you know, that we've covered the moral complications of this up and down for weeks on end now. It was a bit of a shame that the timing of it, I mean, not least of all because obviously it's kind of thrown Liverpool's pre-season plans into a little bit of disarray. But the fact that he basically had to film his own farewell video and it was done horrendously. And then there's a day while Liverpool obviously scrabble around waiting for everyone to get back in the building from the Germany tour so they could do some content to say farewell to him, what have you. But what are your general thoughts on it? How are you feeling?
Do you know what? I think there's a few different ways to look at it. From his perspective, look, he's done so well for us. I've been one of his biggest fans. He's been one of my favourite players of this era. And I think I'm made up that he gets to go and earn...
Sorry, Steve's brought his juice bottle on with him.
with his black currant in. that's Lucas's, that, isn't it?
No, it's mine and it's water. You know, we got this
last year
when
at the
we played in the Pride tournament.
I got one of them when we interviewed Dick Kite.
No, and I'm dealing with a tickly cough, and every time I wasn't on camera, I was going to wet me whistle.
you pulled a baby's bottle of juice out.
Well, because
there's some chocolate animals down there as well.
I don't trust myself with cups around electrical items.
just in life, but
I mean, I tried to do it with them when I wasn't on camera, but then you were late.
You should have warned me you were going to do that beforehand because, like, you brought a baby's bottle out and started sucking on it in
the
middle.
It's a water bottle.
Yeah, I know.
Do you not have water bottles?
No, I've literally got one of them as well, but it just looked hilarious because, yeah, you've got it.
I'm hydrating.
Yep, doing a great job. Great job.
I'm really pleased for him. He gets to earn a load more money. Probably another generation or two of his family are going to be looked after. For me, he's given enough to us as fans to deserve all the money he's getting. Look, we can go on all day about all the things he's said and done in the past, and that is his issue to deal with now because he made those alliances. He's going to have to deal with the consequences. That's on him. But from a Liverpool perspective, like I was talking about this with my friends recently, I don't think Liverpool are planning a million years of letting Henderson go. There's obviously, he's done one of those kind of go, and Klopp said, well, look, I don't want to keep you here if you don't want to be here. We all know what he's like, don't we? So I think it's a blow to us as a team. The dressing room is going to be hit hard. I think the leadership team's double pronged hit in it with Milner going, so I think there's big shoes to fill there. And please, I say it looks now like we're going to move forward ourselves, which we're obviously going to come to in the second part of the show. So I think there's been a lot of change this year, so why not? I'm at that stage now, why not? Let's just go for it.
I found it interesting, Jürgen referenced in one of his pre-match or post-match, I can't remember now, about Milner, he went, when he talked about solutions, didn't he? And he said, like, you know, we always had James Milner to come on and close out a game and we're going to need to replace that. And I do wonder if that was, you know, maybe that was earmarked for Jordan, because there was reports that they had a conversation about what Jordan Henderson's role was going to be. It didn't say, Jordan's not an idiot. Like, you know, we signed for Fabinho and he asked, can he start playing further forward again? That back in the day, and he got his wish and he did well there. But we've just spent best part of £100 million on two number eights. He knew his game time was, unless he was going to go back to being a number six, which I don't think was ever really on the cards.
Well, when you consider he never really he was never really a huge fan of doing that.
No, he did a good job at it, and it just felt like he was being earmarked for the James Milner role. You'll be an 8, you'll be a 6, you might go and do some run that right back occasionally. You're going to come on for 5 or 10 minutes, and I think that was the role in the squad he was being earmarked for. He might not have fancied that. Completely understand it. It's not for everyone. So the money's coming and everyone's agreed. My thinking, and I'm kind of like what Sam just said there, is that I think it can be positive. I think Liverpool's two worst regular players last year were Fabinho and Henderson. So as long as you get the upgrades in and it all works out well, Liverpool could be better from this. But it's certainly unplanned. This wasn't part of the meticulous plan that Liverpool like to do with their squad. This isn't that, which is why 2 weeks before we play Chelsea, we haven't got a DM. Yeah. We've been left, you know, I know we're going to speak about that later. So I think it could work out. I think the way it was handled was poor.
Yeah.
A video of him training with another team before he's left.
Yes.
You know what? It's not bad.
It's a mess.
It's a bit, and it, I don't know.
Their side's been awful. Yeah, hasn't it? Yeah. Their side have not played respect at all.
I think it's been, he shouldn't have been on that pitch training.
He should know better than that, by the way.
That's bad, yeah.
Yeah, well, it just speaks to the shit show of the whole thing, doesn't it, Dan? You know, it's been a mess from start to finish, and, you know, Klopp kind of referenced the getting used to this is how sort of transfers are now, and we've talked about it for a couple of weeks about how it's all arse about tit, you know, and this is the Saudi stuff is an even more exacerbated example of that, where they're having quiet words with players before even bothering to register official interest and not even talking to the clubs in any way, shape or form about it. And Henderson's fallen foul, and yeah, everything about it was just it's just been a mess. And I'm glad that there was a degree of positivity. I thought the video with the players was quite nice. It was quite touching. You could see how upset a couple of them were over it and what have you. So, you know, chose what he means. The manager's not been very vocal on it.
He did his own video, yeah, to be fair, and that was good.
Yeah, just, you know, the whole thing around it, you know what I mean? And it's just a mess.
It is a mess. It's been pretty amateurish as well, and it's not befitting, because Sam sort of referenced how brilliant the captain has been. It's not befitting of the send-off he should have got, in my opinion. Like, it should have been. We've seen him sort of walking around an empty Anfield doing his own farewell video. It shouldn't have been that. It should have been much more akin to what we did for Firmino and Gino Wijnaldum and players gone by. It should have been that type of send off, if not more so, because, you know, as much as we all love Bobby Firmino, the character, the player, Jordan Henderson was the captain that won us everything, you know, ended that Premier League week. So we should have had a lot more, and it shouldn't have been the amateurish mess that it's been. But you said there, like, the art of tapping up is no more. It doesn't exist anymore. That's not a thing. It's antiquated, that now. Yeah. It's just Saudi clubs contact the player, see if they're interested, and then they'll start the business. Then they might contact the club. So it's not a thing anymore, that. So I think we can get used to that, to be honest with you. That's just how the norm is now with transfers. But I agree with the point. It definitely wasn't planned. Definitely sort of thrown Liverpool's best laid plans up in the air, because, like Steve referenced, we like to be meticulous. We like to be proactive and not reactive. But it looks like Jörg Schmadke has walked into a bit of a situation here, and how he sort of deals with it and how he can sort of cope and get it right is going to be crucial. Because I do think, to sort of tie a bow in it, I do think Liverpool can benefit from all of this. It wasn't part of what we wanted to do this summer, but it might leave us in a better place, providing we get the decisions right from here on out.
I also think, Paul, I don't know if you agree, but, like, yeah, the money's good, and we can throw Fabinho in this. I know it hasn't officially been announced yet, but, like, yeah, the money's good, but Liverpool still let them go. Like, there was talk about Luis Diaz, and Liverpool, like, nah. So they're obviously relatively comfortable.
Everyone's got a price.
They have, but Jordan Henderson's price wasn't that high. You know what I mean? It was like 12 million quid. But, I mean, like, if they'd come in with £100 million for Mo Salah, they'd have probably got told no. I think Liverpool are still relatively comfortable losing these two players, which kind of a little bit, again, go back to my point earlier, it probably shows you that they're all right. Like, they probably knew that there was a bit of a downturn going to get 12, you know, effectively getting your money back on two lads who you've had for years and have won everything. I think Liverpool are relatively comfortable, and the way the manager's been speaking about the income, and he seems all right with it, but he's all right with it long term. I mean, short term, we play a game in 2 weeks.
Well, exactly, because he's that kind of manager. You know, he's not the kind of guy to just get upset about things that are... The reality is what the reality is. He'll build with what he's got, for better or for worse. So yeah, he's a laissez-faire kind of guy, and that stuff, once he's wrapped his head around it, he'll move forward. Feels just, I don't know, not negligent, properly negligent. That would be if we got to September and we hadn't replaced the butter DM in. But in this market where everybody wants a DM, and now we've just basically thrown two out for probably, well, it's enough money to buy Lavia, but it's not enough money to change the landscape.
Go get Caicedo, yeah, exactly.
Right, well, we'll pick up on the transfer stuff.
Can I just add one thing on it, just with the Henderson thing? I think one of the things with Henderson, like people, a lot of people will say, oh, yeah, but Henderson was captain last year and we didn't do so well. And I think that's kind of the point. You know, when you're winning games, say Liverpool win the first 10 games of the season, it won't matter who's captain because everyone's flying, everyone's putting in the same direction. The captaincy and the leadership comes in when you're struggling. And you might not see it in the next game, but it's in that week. It's how Milner and Henderson and potentially Van Dijk and so pick them up and get them to go again. And then eventually when you do pick up that form again, it's probably a partly down to obviously the management and the players themselves, but the leadership team keeping them going until that form turns up.
Gakpo referenced that, he said we were playing poorly and Jordan had a meeting. One of the first things I remember is that we had
a speech.
You had the speech and I was like, wow, this guy is a captain. That is something they're going to have to...
If we get beat by Chelsea, that's a real test of our collectiveness and our leadership now.
Yeah, well, it's right, because you talk about it, you know, the one of the examples as well of Henderson being held up is how he kept them going through COVID. You know, we've interviewed people when we did the Henderson documentary, and Trent said to me, you know, like that, you know, we don't talk about the league's not won. The league's not won. You know what I mean? No, it's not. And they're all going, come on, like, come on, Jordan. And he just refused to even have the conversation about how the title was won. So and that was actually pivotal to them maintaining that. What was it, 26 or 27 or 27 or 28 wins or whatever it was, up to the Wofford game. Because Henderson set the bar for that. And as you say, someone else has now got to come in and do that. You know, Fabinho confirmation yet, which again is just it just feels like a fucking mess, this whole thing. Look, like Mahrez got his deal done in about 3 days. Everyone else's seems to be, you know, like, it's like, oh, someone's linked with Saudi. Oh, there he is. He's sorted. He signed his contract and he's over there. We're going to do the latest updates on that on the Biased Transfer podcast later. But the Fabinho ones, anyone think?
He's out there, isn't he? And he's had his medical, so we're just waiting to see him.
Mm. 2 weeks of, like...
With a very financially...
But it nearly fell through. I think that was the issue. He was on his way back, and then he was back again, payment terms and all that. But, yeah, again, from... It feels like, there are certain clubs who it's just harder to deal with. And that might be us. It could be Liverpool who are really being really meticulous.
City and Newcastle don't really need to Chelsea, over specifics of deals. Yeah, and Chelsea. Yeah.
We're us and United. They've took ages to get rid of Telles, and Barry's still not confirmed, is he? We're financially transparent football team, so I think it tells its own story, doesn't it?
That's a good point. Yeah. You know what? I don't think anyone can sum that up any better. So yeah. Right. Look, let's move on to the third of the pre-season games. Dan, Leicester beat them 4-0. Yeah. Pleasant. I had a good time coming here. It was a bit early to be watching a game of footy, I will admit. I had a little struggle with yawning through the first 20 minutes or so until my first cup of tea kicked in. What I will say about it is there was a lot of very miserable human beings in the chat for the first opening 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. It wasn't... We did show a couple of little vulnerabilities on the counter-attack, but... And people don't notice it until... A lot of people don't notice it until goals go in because they're the great signifiers. Actually, we stopped that pretty sharpish. Mm-hmm. And it was after about... I called it about the 25-minute mark, but it'd gone a little bit earlier than that. Leicester never really laid a glove on us after that point.
Oh, after that, no, not at all. The disparity in class really sort of showed after that point, didn't it? But there was definitely... There were vulnerabilities. That's the word in the opening 20. There were moments whereby we were caught in transition a little bit too much. We got caught on the counter a lot, which is what Leicester of old have always done to teams, actually. It was interesting to see that there, with their new manager, I think it's Enzo Maresca, were going to carry on or revert back to that, obviously. Patson Daka hurt us. I think... The cause of concern was the fact that Keller has to make that one huge save early on, which is a really boss save, and your keeper making saves sound, that's what he's there to do.
Yeah.
But when you're playing Leicester, recently relegated, you want to see a little bit more solidity, let's just say. But yeah, I think loads of positives to take from the game yet again. I mean, the attackers are in rich goal-scoring form, aren't they? Nunes takes his goal before he scores really well, which is a positive. So yeah, I think another good pre-season game under our belt with more good minutes to the lads. Obviously, Szoboszlai comes on, I guess, like half an hour, whatever it was, which was nice because we weren't quite sure where he was at. So, yeah, another good run out in the heat of Singapore. And, yeah, I think a lot to take from it, to be honest.
Yeah, for, what you want to see is forward scoring goals. For me, Salah's a big one. He's at his creative best, and I think he's at his best when he's creating, because he'll always score.
Yeah,
and I think the other one is Nunes, because I think you'll always see Gakpo, Diaz, Jota just sort of rotate, chipping in with goals. But Salah and Nunes for me are the two that we need to pop for the season to go where we want it to go, because Nunes has to score goals. That's his job, isn't it? Others can all do other things and create madness themselves, but he is the goal scorer, so it was a good finish. And again, the goals that followed, the work Salah did was brilliant. So really impressed with the red so far.
It's I do wonder whether, like, Salah and Trent this time last year were promised something about how Liverpool were going to play, and because of the injuries and the mess that kind of unfolds as the season goes on, they had those promises sort of reneged upon, and you don't really get back to that until the back end of the season when we switch the system. And I think there's a bit of, like, Salah, and you could see this in the community shield, and it's funny because there was an Honest Day thing on Facebook, so I was looking back at my photos of that, and you just, Salah just kind of not even part of the team, he's kind of stepping back and soaking it up a bit, like, I've signed my contract, this is my team, I'm more of an elder statesman, look at let the young lads go and soak this all in, how great it is. And obviously Trent just looked like he had a cob on for the first half of the season. I just wonder whether there is a bit of this now. We rebooted the attack last year and we never really got to see that in action. I think we're seeing that now, Steve, and it looks like Salah in particular, it just looks like he's playing with a weight off. He's picking the ball up wide right, he's making the pitch huge, as big as he can, but he's not got this pressure on to, like, I've got to be three men and slam this in the top bin. He is doing, as Sam said, he's playing creator role a bit more, which we know he's actually brilliant at. When Salah's just like, it's almost like he's gone, I'll score today. If I don't score, I'm definitely going to get an assist. And I made a prediction yesterday, it wouldn't shock me if we literally went, like, there wasn't a game went by where Salah didn't actually register some sort of goal contribution.
Yeah, because you cast your mind back to start last season and it was very odd. Mm-hmm. He was playing, like, on the touchline, and it was a bit like, what are we trying here? And Alexander Arnold was right back. He wasn't inverted, but he was going walkabout, and it was all just a bit of a shambles. And then the season quickly got away from Liverpool. They cocked that one right up. There's not much sense to that this year, really, is there? So, on the thing with Salah is that he's the man now. Like, the other two have gone. Like, it is the Mo Salah show. It's you're talking about who's in the team. It's Mo Salah plus two. You can argue till the cows come on what the other two are, and there are justifiable arguments for all four, two of any of those four, but Mo Salah plays. So he's kind of, he can be a little bit relaxed. He's Mo Salah, of course he's sound, and he's got nothing to prove. He'll be pissed off that he's got to play Europa League football and he'll want to change in. I would never doubt Mohamed Salah's, like, commitment to that, you know what I mean? He's a born winner and he wants to win and get Liverpool back, but, and himself back to where he needs to be. But it's the whole, what I've been impressed with is that there are certain areas of the pitch, well, one in particular, obviously six, we'll speak about later, where, like, yikes, the options aren't great. Up front, like I say, any combination of Salah plus two, and I'm relatively comfortable with all of them. Nunes is playing really well down the middle so far. Jota's been brilliant down the middle and on the left. Diaz looks sharp. Gakpo looks brilliant. And so that, Sam's right. The attacking side of the team is really, really positive. And it might be, listen, if we are going to be in a bit of a situation where we're going to have to not accept that the defence isn't great, but there's work to be done and there's signs to be made, you might have to go and score a few. We've scored four in three consecutive games now. It might be that you've got to win a couple of 4-2s while you figure out who your DM is and how he fits in, or Stefan Bocetic doesn't fit you. They might have to do it. We've certainly got the firepower to score against anybody, well, and that's the main thing.
This was the thing last season. Goals cover up a multitude of sins. Mm-hmm. They paper over cracks, and we didn't score enough goals last year by early miles. On. Yeah, exactly. You know, by miles. Apart from the ones where we got the outliers, we got Bournemouth and United, which really helped to bolster the overall goals scored. And give some great memories, particularly United. We beat them 7-0. They haven't lost like that by that many goals in like 70 years. But yeah, I think Steve's point is great. I think, Dan, you want a rounded squad, you want a rounded team, you want to get back to us being the best of the best, where we were the best defence and the best midfield and the best attack. But in the interim, if you've just got the best attack, then we should be at least having a bit of fun on the road.
Yeah, and it certainly looks like that, doesn't it? You reference it there. You know, these preseason games have been fun for that reason, really. We have been a little bit vulnerable at the back. We've been a little bit too easy to attack against. But yeah, in terms of going forward, the options, the firepower's there in abundance, and you can include the attacking midfielders in that as well. Obviously, Bobby Clark, I was really impressed with him yesterday. Szoboszlai, McAllister looks levels above. He looks absolutely outstanding. So there's loads to be dead happy about in an attacking sense. And yeah, we might have to. And it's interesting that Klopp, when he spoke on the We Are Liverpool podcast, referenced what you've just touched upon there in terms of about wanting to be the best at everything. And yesterday, I think it was the manager of Leicester again said this is the best team in transition in the world. So it's interesting that we might have mastered that already. But yeah, I think if we are going to go into the season a little bit short of where we'd like to be, obviously there's a few more weeks of the transfer window after that to sort of address those issues, then it's not a bad place to be if you score, if your attackers and your lads who score the goals, I mean, on fire, like all of them seem to be right now. I mean, you said it there, Steve. I don't know who would be picking as a front three. I'd probably have my choice, but you could easily sort of make an argument for a few different options. So that's a pretty positive place to be, because I'd be, especially going to Chelsea, I'd be very reticent to say that we weren't going to concede a couple of big chances. Mm-hmm. But if we've got our lads in the form that they're in, I'd also back us to win the game.
I think that's spot on. And, you know, it's interesting in the whole six thing, Sam. Obviously, you know, we just don't have defensive midfielders at the football club at the moment. We tried Jones in there for this one, and I just thought it was a better fit in general. I was a little concerned early doors with those chances that we talked about. But once Liverpool got possession of the footy and then started pressing correctly in the attack, it's what Jürgen and Pep Linders have been talking about all along. You know, we weren't energetic enough, we weren't organised, disciplined enough in our press last season, and that left us exposed going the other way. Once we got that sorted, we didn't need Claude Makélélé playing as a destroying number six for us. You needed Curtis Jones to just get the ball, move it on, get it moving on.
And I think Leicester being where they are, if you cast your mind back to last year when we played Leicester, I remember missing the first 15 minutes of the game, getting in and watching it, and we battered them, and I was like, what's everyone crying about? And then I saw them first 15 minutes back after the game where they had loads of counter-attacks. It's a bit what Leicester are like, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And I think, but with it being a pre-season friendly as well, I think it probably takes a little while to get that motivation going in a game as well, and you'll see that. I mean, look, Curtis knows our system well as well. He knows, Klopp's talked about how tactically aware he is, and I think that's why he can go in there and do it. But you've also got to look at the team that is proud. There's always a couple of young players in there, or players that aren't really going to be around or in the squad or starting lineup come the first game of the season. So there probably is a little bit of getting to know each other as well as having the new players in there. So you're going to concede chances. Look, you know, you can lose pre-season games that mean nothing. But the fact that we're going out and winning them all, we drew the other one, I think it shows that we're all moving in the right direction. And for me, the six things, I thought McAllister would probably play more there than he has, if I'm being honest. But it is a thing. But in pre-season, if we can get everything else where it needs to be, at least it means we've only got one, maybe two issues to fix.
That's what it feels like to me. It feels like, because we could, why would you not just have played McAllister in there? But it feels like we're trying to make sure that the attack is right. Mm. Don't undercut that. There are issues that need to be resolved, but just find a stopgap solution for some things and put as many of your best players in their best positions and trust that that's enough to carry you through.
Yeah, it is weird because as it stands, Curtis Jones might be playing DM against Chelsea. Like, no, you don't want. As it stands, that's probably the odds-on favourite, which we don't want. That isn't what Liverpool are after at all. It's one thing doing it against the Championship side of a friendly, but Chelsea are Stamford Bridge on the opening day of the season. Nah, you don't want that. So there are things to work out. Like I say, Stefan Bicetic is injured. We don't know where he might get a couple of games under his belt, at least one. The game at Preston against Darmstadt. Yeah. And you don't. That could change things, but. That's the one thing. Everything else is, you're absolutely right. They could have just dropped a couple of things. It was interesting that he's gone now back to putting Trent at right back, and he's basically said that's where he's going to be. The first two games were just, they were
get fit. He didn't have Jones.
And that was just like a get. They were get fit, get yourself back. And these are now, you can start seeing a little bit more tactical nouts and a bit more being applied. So I think a lot of that team that started the other day will start against Chelsea, but like. I think the reason that Leicester got in so often was Jones in the six a little bit. There was a lot of space there. And I get it. It isn't his position. He's an attacking lad who's just going to do a job. There'll be games where, you know, if you're dominating the ball at home to someone, you might be able to use a Thiago or a Jones. But Liverpool still need to get that sorted. You know, if the Lavia stuff, I know we're going to talk about later, how long does he need to adapt? Are Liverpool comfortable if he get that deal done? giving him one friendly and then throwing him in. They might have to be, and it might just be needs must. But again, it goes back to the first conversation. They're dealing with something that they didn't really expect to deal with. Mm-hmm. The plan, even if they'd have signed Lavia, which I think they might have done anyway, Fabinho would have still played against Chelsea, and then eventually Lavia would have took over that role. Yeah. But again, we find ourselves in a situation where we are scrambling around.
I think the thing about it, you're right, because I don't disagree with any of it, by the way. I think we are lightweight. We're lightweight in defensive bodies and in the sixth position, without a doubt. Again, we'll focus more on that in part two. But once you're only vulnerable to the counter attack if you let them play the ball. And that's the thing that we just didn't get our heads around, is that once again, a little bit late on in the second half, when I think tired legs and a much weakened defensive side from Liverpool in the second period, they had a couple more chances. Again, they threw a bit of the kitchen sink at it. You know, they brought Ian Acho on toward the end and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, you know, they couldn't get that first pass, let alone the second or third one you need to actually trigger a proper counter attack. So yeah, you know, if we can keep on top of that, then we should be competitive. Just to talk on a couple of the other players and performances, we mentioned the Darwin Nunez stuff. I continue to be impressed by him. Sam's right. You know, we need him. Yeah. We need him to click. It feels like we're all in on Darwin Nunez right now. We had this conversation a week ago, and we said, my speculation was I thought Jota was going to start as a nine. It was interesting to see him used off the left. It was interesting to see him use Gakpo back in the nine in the second half. But one thing that actually hasn't changed is Salah's still off the right, and we've played Darwin consistently through the middle. It leads you to believe that they're going to go for that. All in on Darwin Nunez.
Yeah, I think so as well. And the positional side of it is probably the most interesting point. Obviously, his form and the fact that he's taking goals and he's pretty calm in front of the goal as well, that's all great. But for me, it is positionally, because we didn't really find the perfect fit for him last year. For a little bit, it looked like he might be from the left. He looked quite good centrally as well at times. You're kind of trying to find a place for him. But now it feels as though, right, you be Darwin Nunez, which is getting up and down centrally, getting yourself in the box, getting on the end of things and scoring goals. And that has to be his fit. He is lightning quick. We know that. We've seen him do that. So sort of running behind, that type of thing. That's what Darwin Nunez does. That's what he is. That's what he was sort of born to be, if you like, as a footballer. So I think not overloading him with stuff to think about is crucial. And that sounds so simplistic. It sounds a little bit harsh in a way as well. But I think we did see times. I always harp back to the 7-0 game. And Darwin Nunez started that game on the left and just looked lost. Yeah. For half an hour. Didn't know what to do. He had too many instructions. He's running back with his man. He just looked confused by it all. Whereas if you just keep it pretty simple for Darwin Nunez and say, you running behind on your man's shoulder, get in the box and make things happen from there, he can do that. Yeah. We've seen he can do that. So I do think we might have to sort of strip it back a little bit. And it's going to be a horses for courses thing, because there's going to be games whereby you want Jota in the central role, because he'll just get on the end of stuff instinctively, bang, goal. Cody Gakpo, listen, we all know how much I love Cody Gakpo, but when you want his intelligence, his ability to drop deep and make things happen around him, you're going to want him as well. But I just think, judging by what we've seen in pre-season, I think we're going to keep it real simple for Nunez. We might have to sacrifice a little bit with that, because I think Klopp would like him to be this sort of... Because he mentioned it over the weekend, didn't he? He said what would get him into the team would be his readiness to defend. So he's going to have some instructions to take on. But I think in terms of seeing him track back and sort of create space and hold off men, don't know if that suits him.
No, and it's interesting. Paul Tompkins did a great piece on an analysis piece on the Liverpool attackers, and then a couple of other comparable ones, you know, Erling Haaland being like the grade A, just saying he's just an absolute freak of nature, which we all know. But it was interesting seeing the spider diagrams compared between the two, and broad shape-wise between Darwin and Haaland are the same. It's just that Darwin's got a lot more like progressive carries and progressive take-ons and stuff because he played left wing and he was being asked to do more shit. Nobody's overburdened than Erling Haaland with players a false nine and think about
how else to do it. Yeah. He wouldn't be able to do it. With Haaland, like we were speaking about, he's like Van Nistelrooy. You know, but you didn't see Ruud van Nistelrooy dropping in, pirouetting on the pitch and pulling players, he didn't really make unselfish runs neither. Neither does Haaland. Haaland makes runs so he gets on the ball. Yeah. When you play up front for Liverpool, Bobby probably made two unselfish runs to make space for somebody else, knowing he's not getting the ball before he did one where he got the ball. And I think that's the difference. If you can get Nunez in that same mould, look, he's a freak Haaland, and let's not expect Nunez to do the same. But if you can get Nunez in the same kind of mould, get him moving in the box, making those movements with the defenders, get on the end of the ball. And look, if Trent's going to drift into midfield, I did think last year when I think Trent set him up twice, once against Leeds and once against Newcastle, in a similar mould, pulled inside and clipped it over the top because he can do it. And Nunes scored, and I thought, ooh, that's the way Nunes could be used. And we didn't really see him after that, did we?
He got injured.
Injured and all that.
Yeah, toe, wasn't he?
But that can now carry on, and they've got to know each other a bit more. The fact that he speaks English now helps and all that. He's took the number 9 on Trent's. It feels like it's his time now, doesn't it? Yeah. I think that all fits into play together.
You know what bodes well for him is that I think he's played a lot with Mo Salah.
Yeah.
And Mo Salah's going to play. So yeah. I don't know if it's tipping the managers at it, but it kind of is a little
bit. Yeah, absolutely.
If you're building partnerships and things like that, we've seen a lot of Salah Nunes together, which makes you think that's the manager's go-to one. And there's pros and cons, for all of them. What I would say about Darwin is that he does get himself in goal scoring positions a lot. Like, his XG, even last year, was mad. Just didn't really finish it. His composure has been better so far. You mentioned the offside one. He took really well, obviously, was offside. His finish is actually a good striker's finish. So he's got a lot going for him. I think, going back to like the odds on favourites for the Chelsea game, I think Darwin's got himself in the lead. I think he'll be starting up front.
I just think it's smart. You know, it's like we got Gakpo in and went, right, okay, well, there's almost our safety net here because he's so good and he can play anywhere. And I wonder whether it's almost what we saw at the weekend was that second half team was a bit like, okay, well, look, let's go all in on Nunes and we'll give him a spell of time. We won't tell him he's got a spell of time. We'll just tell him he's the main man. But if he goes tits up, Diogo Jota can play number 9. And if that whole style of play doesn't work, we'll go back to Gakpo playing and we'll go back to the Firmino style attack. Liverpool have got our attack is so well constructed now with so many different things that you can do. I think we've got plan A, B and C quite comfortably there. Yeah. And then actually when you throw Doke and even Diaz into the mix, who are kind of almost peripheral to that, they feel like support players to what the other lads are trying to do. The other lads feel like the goals. These feel like the ones who are just going to come on and be electric, be X factors, be unpredictable for us. But I really like the Nunes stuff because I agree, let's just make him centre forward, play him centre forward. Man City never overburdened Sergio Aguero with those things. They don't overburden Haaland. You just let him do what he does, and there'll be game times where you need more intelligence up front. Don't make Darwin do that. Just move Gakpo into the 9.
Yeah.
Move Jota into the 9. Do that. You know, who knows? There might be someone else who arrives. You know, Szoboszlai might be good at that. You know, down the line or whatever. And again, City don't arse themselves with. You know, they've got a load of players who can do loads of stuff, and then that allows you a couple of specialists in your side to really make it. And yeah, that's what Darwin feels like. It feels like we're going to trust in the specialist, and he's now a year more sort of integrated into the squad. But that works both ways. He now knows more about his teammates, and his teammates know more about him. And you know, they know where he's going to run, and he knows now that he's going to get the passes when he makes the runs as well. I think it's very, very encouraging. The youngsters, Ben Doke is fucking brilliant, and I don't want to oversing his praises because of pressure and what have you, Steve, but that kid, he's so raw, but the raw elements that he's got, I think it was last week we talked about it, like, you know, if Harvey Elliott had his pace, he'd just be the best player on the planet. But he, having those raw attributes, you've seen it again, time and time again, stands his man up and bursts past him from nothing, or it's a little give and go and it's an overlap and run. It's like 3 times he gets to the byline from nothing. And that's just an asset that you can never train. You can train the final ball and the game intelligence and experience that'll come in time, but you can't train being able to go past the man from a standing stop.
No, it's Sterling-esque when we had young Raheem Sterling in the team. He is very raw. He takes a goal well. Actually, it looked like a real planned set piece that Liverpool had designed just for him to nod one home, which is
definitely waiting for him to nod home. Like
4-1.
Yeah, but it worked. He was ghosting him round the back. I don't know if that's the right winger to nod in, and it just happened that he was in there. But yeah, he's very exciting. You're right. He is very, very raw, but he's. The other players know how good he is because he keep giving them the ball and going, you know what, mate, just have a go at him. Go and send him west for 5 minutes and just run rings around whoever that poor left back is. So he is very exciting. I'm guessing, you know, if Liverpool are looking for a sixth attacking option, he's probably throwing himself in the mix. You know, Europa League, certain games, cup games, whatever. Obviously, Szoboszlai rather can go out there if he needed to. We've still got Elliot who can do things as well. But there's something about young lads with pace. And it is frightening you know, for a defensive team. Like, worst case is he's absolute shite, but he can just run there fast. Mm-hmm. And you've got Adama Traore, and he gives defenders nightmares. You know, Ben Doak will, no one will want to play against him. You know, you fancy your chances in 90 minutes because you're trying to boot him as often as you can. But like, little 10 minute, 15 minutes cameos. And like, he's so young, he's just turned 17. He's got a bright future ahead of him. But like, I wouldn't be sending him out on loan. I'd be keeping him around, getting him used to being at Liverpool. But you are right. There's always one or two young lads who stand out. Like, they're just different, and he is just different.
Yeah, there's a level, I think, to the young players, Dan. Doak, and I think now Clark, from what I've seen of him in pre-season, are fringe first-team players now. I think Scanlon and McConnell have actually handled themselves really well, to be honest. I thought McConnell, particularly given that he was sold on the river in a big way by Adrian last week, has been okay. Yeah. I think Scanlon's put a good shift in as well. Quant is another one around that level. Great cross for Nunes last week for the header that gets saved. But yeah, Doak and Clark, and Clark in particular, I think he's kind of going under the radar because everyone has just fallen in love with Ben Doak. But Clark just looks a proper Liverpool Klopp midfielder.
Yeah, I really like Bobby Clark as well. I think where it's interesting for Clark as opposed to Doak is positionally, because obviously we're quite blessed now in that sort of attacking eight role, having Simon Mcallister and Szoboszlai, and we've got obviously Harvey Elliott, Curtis Jones on the back of that. So I do wonder with Clark whether, in terms of short term, whether he might need a loan out just to play more senior football. He's a bit older than Ben Doak as well, so that could be the outcome there. But I really like him, been really impressed, took his goal well. You know, did himself absolutely no harm yesterday in that performance. But he deserved the goal, actually, to be honest with you, watching the game. I felt like he deserved something to show for his performance. But yeah, Ben Doak is... I waxed lyrical about Ben Doak all day long. I think he's sensational, I really do. And like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I could have sat here and said, oh, I think he might need a loan. I think I might have sat here and said that. But now I've completely shifted. He has to stay around. He has to be the guy. For me, you mentioned a couple of possible options there in terms of backing up Salah as a right winger. Let Doak do it. Like, let him do it, because left backs are going to deal with Mohamed Salah, probably struggle to deal with Mohamed Salah for 70, 75 minutes. And then Ben Doak's going to come on. You think, what's going on here? Why is this kid coming on? I don't need this. But yeah, I think all the youngsters have done really well, I should just say, to finish that little section, actually. Because I think even Kumas and people like that have done a good job. And I'm really impressed with Joel Quant. So I thought the block at the end of the game yesterday was really impressive, too. So it's been a positive pre-season for some of them. Some of them, like you touched upon, won't be anywhere near the first team this season, and rightfully so, but yeah, be interesting to see what they do and where they go, because I think there's a future for some of them lads there, especially Ben Doak and Bobby Clark.
Yeah, I think Clark will probably go to Preston on loan when they're back. I think
we've got a little agreement there, haven't we?
I think they're waiting for, obviously he had to go on the tour, they need the numbers and things like that, but I think once Thiago, Bacetic, and maybe
signing.
At that point you've got, that's
the good. I like that, just sorry, that's I like fine. Because I want to see him, I want to see him play football, you know what I mean? And under 23 is great, 18s whatever, but I think sort of going to the championship and playing good competitive football will be great for him.
It'll harden him, won't it? The problem with Doak going on loan, say you stick Doak to the championship, he'll just get volleyed everywhere because of the type of player he is, whereas Clark, you kind of almost want him to, because it'll make him more solid when he comes back.
Doak's fortunate in a weird way that he's too young for a loan. Really.
Yeah, he is.
You know what I mean? He's actually still got development to do. There's more benefits in him just being with the under 21s.
Europa League.
But I'm training with the first team. He'll gain more from that. Whereas you're right, Bobby Clark, actually, if you're going to play in midfield, you are going to need to toughen up a bit. Look, Doak, we saw him when we were filming the Hendo interview for Bobby a couple of weeks ago at the AXA, and he's short, but he's, you know, he's quite stocky he's quite a stocky build. I mean, he's quite a powerful lad anyway. I mean, just judging by how deep his voice is, he's clearly got it. He's clearly got something going on. But he's
Jerry Sherman.
Yeah,
Jerry Sherman, built up.
Scottish song.
He's and just having that pace means he'll be all right. And I think he's a bit of a. He's got a gnarl about him. You know, he nearly gets injured playing last week because he gets in a tussle with the Greta Firth left back, and he actually gets his ankle caught or his calf caught or whatever. So I think he'll be all right. And you're right, the age thing means you can hold him as your sixth forward. And then he'll be made up just to be on the bench, and he can be that bit of an X factor. Yeah, I'm pleased with that. Stevie C 78 sent a super chat in while we were on. Apparently it's his first ever super chat, so well done, mate. I'm not worried about the fact that we conceded some chances. He says we will always concede chances playing the high press again. P.S. Doak must make the squad. Yeah, I think we're all in agreement there. Such a talent.
Good to see him against Bayern, won't he?
Yeah,
That's a test for Bobby Clark as well.
Yeah. Without a doubt. I'm pleased with that. We mentioned Quanta. I think he probably ties in better to the conversation in part two when we're talking about the defence. But as I mentioned, I thought he had a good, solid performance there. Right, we will take a break, and when we return, we're going to be discussing the Kylian Mbappe transfer bollocks, Lavia, and what Liverpool do with regards to defensive recruitment. See you in a sec. Hey, you, do you like incredible Liverpool memorabilia? Well, I've got a Boss prize for you. It is this. It is a signed Kostas Tsimikas shirt, the man that won us the FA Cup. If you want to be in with a chance of winning this fabulous shirt, then go to redmanplus.com, sign up or upgrade to legend tier status, and your name will go in the prize draw for this. Yes, get a bit of Kostas in your life, because a legend subscriber on redmenplus.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yes, last chance saloon to get your name into the hat for our signed Kostas Tsimikas shirt. Is that right? No, yeah. That was the wrong one. Well done. Our signed legend shirt. Yes, brilliant. One more day. We're going to be doing the draw on one day after this. We're going to be doing the draw on Wednesday during the Bayern Munich game. So if you want to be in terms of winning our signed legend shirt and have your name in the hat for next month's Kostas Tsimikas shirt draw, then go over to redmanplus.com, sign up at legend tier, and you'll be in with a shout for that. Right.
You just announced the next month's prize as well at the same time.
I mean, it was literally just in the video.
No, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right. Perfect. Cool. Legends now, Kostas August. Good prizes, them.
They're all good prizes, yeah.
I mean, ridiculous when you think about it.
I mean, the legends on that shirt are, you know, something to behold, aren't they?
It's something else, like, genuinely.
Eclectic mix.
Eclectic. I couldn't have said it any better, yeah. A genuine, unique and eclectic mix of former Liverpool players on that shirt. Right, Kylian Mbappe. Steve, this is so much horseshit that we can't get anyone to go on record to say how much horseshit this is probably a good way to describe it.
Yeah, just mad. Like, so it's obviously not going to happen. There's no truth in it whatsoever. And this is what annoys you sometimes about, like, gotta be careful. That is obviously a story that's nonsense, complete bollocks. It gets printed, it gets put on the back of a newspaper, it gets put everywhere, and all of a sudden there's all like people laughing and joking. And this knife, I went along with it on social media. I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to, you know, if you don't believe this, you're an idiot. Of course it's nonsense, but this just goes to show sometimes, and it's the extreme example of it, of like, don't believe everything you read, or don't believe everything that gets put across. Like, people keep messaging, like, oh, this rebuild, we were promised £200 million. No one ever promised that. A few people wrote about it in a couple of articles and whatever, and nothing's ever not, you know what I mean? Like, don't believe it. It's just another way to show how massive Liverpool are.
Yeah.
Because it was what was a pretty quiet weekend. The transfers are going to start ramping up this week, aren't they? Ramping up, rather, you know, by Munich with Kane, and there's lots going on, and Chelsea are still spending, blah, blah, blah. Just fill the gap. with absolute bollocks. Liverpool haggling over a couple of million quid for a 19-year-old from Southampton. Don't quite think they're going to give Kylian Mbappe £1 million a week or whatever.
They're going to, yeah, buy, get paid 30 million or whatever to have him for a year to then effectively facilitate him going to Real Madrid. Everything about it just stank down, you know, from minute one. And it's fun. I say this, and I've seen this a lot in the comments. I've seen a lot of people go, I'm worried about this or I'm stressed about this, blah, 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 Liverpool. I've said it elsewhere, but like, there's literally fellas paid millions to actually stress about these things. Mm-hmm. It's if you want to stress about it, stress about it. You can stress about anything in life. There's other things, probably things that you are actively responsible for in your life and you might be paid money for. Probably focus on them. So I find it fun. I think it's funny to see Liverpool link with players that we're never going to get. I like the flight of fancy in the conversation. I just do. But if the slim chance that Liverpool are ever going to sign Mbappe past...
When he
left Monaco, but even more, you know, around the time that when COVID hit and the market fell apart, the only chance we were ever going to get him was 2 or 3 years ago, where you sell Salah for 150 million to Real Madrid and you go and get Kylian Mbappe as his replacement. But now he's now the heir apparent to the best player on the planet. He's turning down 700 million a year moves to Saudi Arabia. You know, it's just nonsense.
That new contract he signed last year, when he basically became the owner of PSG, put pay to any chance that I thought we had of signing him personally. But yeah, it was good fun. I fully enjoyed it. I fully enjoyed the fallout after. I got asked about it on the news show earlier dozens of times in the comments, what about the Mbappe to Liverpool stuff? And yeah, it was utter nonsense. And I actually reached out to a few different people I have conversations with all the time. None of them I'll name names on because some of them are on holiday, but just gave me a little line almost to take away from it. Like, yeah, come on, basically be serious was sort of the response I got from some very reputable French journalists, especially saying he only wants to join Real Madrid. That was sort of the one constant throughout the replies and the conversations I was having. He only wants to join Madrid. Like, his heart is fully set. And I actually do think, you know, he does have some admiration for Liverpool. He's spoken about that in the past. His mum is a big Liverpool fan, as we know. So I do think there is a little something there. But by this point now, it's just Real Madrid. He's just waiting to move to Real Madrid. So as you say, we're not going to sort of facilitate that move and allow it to happen. It's interesting that Romano actually comments on it over the weekend as well. I've seen saying PSG would actually quite like that move to happen because it makes sense for them. It gets the troublesome Kylian Mbappe off their books. But one thing I did want to say is, in the conversations I was having with the chat earlier on our live, is like, do we even need him? And it's not going to happen. Yeah. I'm aware it's not going to happen, but you find a place for Kylian Mbappe in your side. Like, sensational.
Well, this is why... I was saying this on the last show on Sunday, was, and you can't have a fair discussion about this on the internet, because I totally agree. Liverpool do not need to go and buy another striker. We've got six brilliant attacking options. I don't think there's a club on earth that's got a better, more varied, quality of six attacking options available to them. But it's fucking Kylian Mbappe, and there is just a thing of like, yeah, just sort it out in a year. You know what I mean? Like, have him come in, let him score, let him and Haaland duke it out for the Golden Boots. Let him score 50 goals, and then move on, and then worry about the aftermath.
Here's a poll, though, Paul. Sign Mbappe for a year. Sign no one else. Sign a defender and a midfielder.
Yeah.
Don't sign Mbappe.
Oh, sign me up with the Mbappe.
Mbappe would win. So all this, we need this. So that just explains all. Do you know what the worst thing about all this is? It stinks of it as well. He's going to get his loyalty bonus, right? And in a couple of days, he'll be ticking down. He'll have a clock in his house. You know, it's coming down. Like when we're going live in an hour. It's taking 58 minutes to go. Jim, he's like, White. Got that 2 days. Big yellow blinking thing. Yeah, so when he gets his money, and then if Real Madrid aren't going to buy him, this stinks of a loan move to United or Chelsea. It stinks of everything that they're accusing us of. United going, go and get him for a year. It would probably be doing for them. But Todd Bowie, that's his name all day, innit?
Yeah.
That is in London, and you can just see it happening because they haven't really got many loads of top forwards at the minute.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Don't see it, but it's almost at a point where, like, he wants to go to Madrid, and PSG are so pissed off at him for going to Madrid that they won't sell him to Madrid.
Yeah,
so he's in a year holding pattern. Saudi Arabia was the perfect get-out clause for PSG. They're going to let him go, get over. We don't have to deal with Madrid and everything. But then he's through his band in the way by saying no. So this might just be, again, it could be an agent just throwing it out there. You know, Mbappe's available. But link him to Liverpool because it'll go big, but someone wants him on loan. There's a chance he goes there. You know what I mean? It's potentially there.
Yeah, I agree on that. You know, something's going to get done because someone's going to look stupid, and like the PSG chairman or whatever has been saying, he will not be leaving on a free. Mm-hmm. He said he's not. Kylian Mbappe's not leaving this club on a free transfer. We'll get, you know, we'll if he doesn't agree, then we's sell him. But you're right, Mbappe's going, nah, mate, I'm all right.
So 60 million bonus on, is it tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
August 1st.
What they'll try to do is get Real Madrid to buy him. But Real Madrid are going, wait, we'll just wait 12 months.
Real Madrid will get exactly right. That Real Madrid are not flush with cash. And this is the problem with the market in general. It's a point I want to make on the bias transfer pod, because, you know, there's been some big moves, but there's not been a mass volume of movement this summer like I think we thought. But this is the thing. Real Madrid are not soft. You know, they're looking at him going, well, it's the best player on the planet. He desperately wants to play for us. And there's no, like Liverpool, like holding out for Bellingham, and then he's just eventually gone, actually, you know what, I think I just would rather play for someone else and you're up shit creek.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to turn Kylian Mbappe's head in the next 12 months. So they're just like, great, we'll sit back and wait. They bought Hossolu, he'll do for the year. They're going to finish in the top three in La Liga. They'll make a good fist of the Champions League, as they always do. And then, yeah, they might not be a superpower, you know, might not quite be able to have the same firepower this year. Not that Vinicius Jr. won't carry them through probably regardless anyway. But, yeah, and then next year they've got Vinicius Jr. and Kylian Mbappe, and, you know, if they keep all the Valverde, then brilliant.
They probably want Haaland as well at some point. So that the money they save on Mbappe might get them Haaland at some point. Yeah. I know that sounds crazy to say, but that is sort of the earmarked move. So get Mbappe for free. You've saved yourself 160 million to go and get Haaland. Then.
Right. Yeah. Let's get back to us, because obviously Mbappe to Liverpool is never going to happen. Lavia, not done. Does seem like it's closing in though, Dan. I kind of surmised yesterday that we're in a weird position with him, where they need to get it done as soon as possible. But if it's not done by now, they don't really need it done till kind of like Wednesday, Thursday, because the squad don't even get back from Singapore till then. Mm-hmm. So they have got a little breathing room to just get it sorted over the coming days, as much as that's a bit of a frustration for all of us who want to see it all moving forward at pace.
Yeah, I think we all, when it all sort of really kicked into gear last week, I think we all felt like there was a chance. I think there's a report, actually might have been David Lynch, saying they would like to get him on the plane to Singapore, but now that's not a possibility. Yeah, there is a little bit of time to sort of relax, and the chances are he's not going to fly out there. Even if it was done today, it would seem crazy to do that. So, yeah, we haven't got a few more days to kind of dot some I's and cross some T's on it. And I hope we do, because it's a fascinating one for me, the Lavia stuff, because we clearly really like him as a player. We've identified him for quite some time now. And I do think there's a little bit of sort of buying potential with him. We know what he could go on to become. We clearly like the profile. We think he is going to be a star of the future. The issue we have is we might need to be a star now as well. And I'm personally not entirely sure he's ready for that. I'd love to be proved wrong. I'd love him to come in and be the six at Stamford Bridge and sort of never look back from that moment on. I'm not convinced that's going to be the case. And I spoke to Josh Williams last week on one of our deep dives, and he was saying he likes him as well, but he kind of felt a lot of the reason we are trying to sign him is actually the homegrown quota in that side of things as well. So he thinks he's not quite the perfect fit, it's fair to say. So I do think, even when we get the deal done, he feels like the Henderson replacement to me. Yeah. He's going to come in, take some minutes that Henderson would have had. He might even play in an eight at times, because he feels like a type of technical player that could do that. He'll slot in as a six primarily, and he'll take pressure off whoever it is. Should have been Fabinho, now not going to be Fabinho. So for me, we still need to go and sign the frontline DM after this. If it's just Lavia, that would be a little bit underwhelming to me, because he's 19, one decent season of Premier League football behind him. I do think we're buying, like I say, buying potential, and almost, it sounds so fickle and so silly to say, but we're almost stopping your Chelsea's, your Arsenal's and your Man City's getting what we believe will be a very good player.
It's a weird one with the Lavia thing for me, because I was surprised he played the other day, by the way. Mm-hmm. Come on, like, if you're moving, you protect your asset. So I was quite surprised by that. We did it with R2, didn't we? Thing is, what I get it with Lavia is, I know there's been lots mentioned, I've listened to you guys say and others say about if he comes in, he still shouldn't be the main guy. But I think players like him, where he is in his career, his move needs to be to play football, because he's played a lot last year. Yeah. He's developed to be a £40 million player or so. Or thereabouts. You don't move now and be a second choice. You just don't do that. I think it stunts you. And I think the Bacchettis thing also fits into that, because if we bring in Lavia as our second choice, who's going to play 30 games this season, how many games is Bacchettis going to play if someone else is playing 50? So if we bring Lavia in, and I almost do feel like he's not the perfect fit, because we do need someone more experienced. But if he is the guy, I think he's got to be the guy.
I think I would like Dan to be right, but I think Sam was right. he's the priority, obviously, and they must want him to play because they're not in a position where they can afford to look to the future. They need to get a deal done that gets Liverpool a defensive midfielder to play in the season. And if Lavia comes in, I think it's going to be him and Bacetic. I think Liverpool are going to spend close to 50 million quid on him. I don't think another one's coming in. I think they should, but I don't think they are.
It's an interesting challenge. You know, we just feel, and I guess Thiago and Bacetic, this is my problem with this, by the way. They've not had a pre-season. Mm-hmm. Thiago's not going to get a pre-season, and he's already injury prone. That's saying to me, he's going to break down again next year, you know, and he's already in that kind of situation anyway. So you're relying on Jones, Bacetic, and then Lavia as your main six. And I don't disagree with the point, like, because, you know, you're 19, you're playing for the team, you should be making that step up. But again, big clubs do this. They bring in young lads and go, come and fight, come and earn your stripes. And that's the complication that selling Fabinho was brought upon. It's not even selling Henderson. You know, I'd have been fighting to keep Fabinho more than fighting to keep Henderson, you know, from a squad balance kind of issue. And I've seen a lot of people saying, well, you know, we were all in on Bellingham at 19. It's not about, it's not specifically about the 19. People get lost on a single issue point. He's not played senior football. I said this last week. He's played 7,700 minutes of football as a footballer, including Premier League under 18 league. That's not, and he's played double the amount of senior minutes as Bacetic. And we're a team that wants to win four trophies next season, say.
Yeah.
What people forget is he's a star in the making. You know, he's got all the attributes to be a brilliant footballer. He's got that low centre of gravity. He's great on the ball. He's brave in possession. He's got a good range of passing. Great engine. Fast. Good. Aggressive. Brilliant. But he's 19 years old. 19-year-olds make mistakes and cost you bit moments in big games of football that old players don't. There's a balancing act between the physicality that you lose the older you get, but the experience and the gamesmanship and the dark arts and all those extra bits and pieces. There's a reason why at 37 James Milner was still coming on and shutting games down, and it's not because Liverpool are tight arses. It's because he's fucking brilliant at it, and he could do that in four different positions on the pitch for you. Milner wasn't there because he was he won the lactate test, but he wasn't fast and he wasn't dead skillful and he wasn't tall and he wasn't the strongest player on the pitch, but everything he had and his head kept him ahead of the game. And that's the problem with throwing in on an 18-year-old and a 19-year-old in a specialist position. That's where we should be concerned about
the way they're going about the transfer suggests that's not the case though, because he's priority one. No, there's no one else really. There's a couple of whispers half here and there. I think if they were going to do that, what we're suggesting, they'd have got the other one sorted first. And then Lavia would have been later in the window, can we get a deal done for a young player? They're all in on this one. This is the only one.
There's a little bit of the Chelsea interest sort of pulling our hand on that though, because maybe we have. And also the Lavia thing's been around for. I spoke to Sacha Tavlieri, the Belgian, about 2 months ago about our interest in Lavia. So we've already done due diligence and groundwork on this. So it's actually the easier deal to do. We mentioned before about plans being sort of thrown into disarray.
Yeah.
We already had our plans for Lavia, so that's fine.
Yeah, but I think the plan was, Dan, to spend like 30 million quid on him as Fabinho's backup. There's a difference between that and spending 50 million quid on him. He's going to play.
But we're 50 million quid richer now because we sold Henderson.
I think he's going to play. And I think Jürgen disagrees with your age thing completely. He put Trent in the team and just played him.
Yeah,
and he put Harvey Elliott in the team and just played him after one year's loan at Blackburn. Like, Jürgen doesn't give a fuck. If he thinks you're good enough, he won't.
Yeah,
he's not bothered.
Okay, I do. Yeah, and I think there are definitely examples of that, but they're also... There isn't, there aren't. You know, that works when you've got key senior age footballers in lynch positions in the team.
No, it's a risk.
I think, look, we can't know. If I was to speculate, my overall feeling on it is, I think we've just reached the point of no return where we need a body in.
Yeah.
And I think they know the shape of that deal because they've been negotiating it and they've been looking at it for 2 months.
And they know the player wants to come.
And he's the only one that they can guarantee to get in to give us any sort of training time before the season starts. Everything else I think is market dependent, and we talked about it before, But it's they've tried to remain flexible in the market and wait for things to develop. And you know, the best example of that is Szoboszlai. There's just no way that that was the first choice plan for that position. That's why we were being linked with Gravenberch and Thuram and God knows how many other ones. Yeah, exactly. And all of a sudden that becomes available, and they go, yes, sound perfect. Yeah. Wow, we've played an absolute blinder on that. And Lavia feels like a compromise. Like they're gonna have to pay over the odds for him. And they're going to have to go and get it done ahead of perhaps someone who's a senior.
Could we have got Amrabat, though? I mean, I'm not his biggest fan, but it seems as though United think so. But that seems like a deal we could have done in January. 20-odd, 30 million quid and lowish wages. So I think on Lavia, we don't know the answer to this, by the way, hence because we're not on the inside and we don't have the same level of depth of stats and analysis. But if you look at some of the players around the world, like Pedri, Gavi, Valverde, when he came through et al., they're a level of talent where you go, you don't need what they're him and him needed. If we think Lavia is of that ilk, then it's we need to get him in a world class team, and you'll see it.
Yeah,
Southampton.
We don't know that, do we? And that's the big thing.
Southampton picked him, mate. Like, and so, like, they're a very good team. I know Dan spoke to, was it Jacob Tanzo, who said, do you think he's the best player they've produced since Bale?
Since Bale, yeah.
Wow.
Like, they think, like, I've got mates who support Southampton who say, honestly, he's the business. Like, they might just believe that good. And I'm with you, I agree with you.
Everton think Jordan Pickford's boss because he's all that they watch.
I'm not
saying Del Avi's not, by the way. I just mean, you watch them.
They're a fan base who have seen young players come through. You know what I mean? And have seen good players and get them. So, I agree. It's uncomfortable. My thinking is the plan, and when Jürgen said the other day, we've got some solutions. I think solutions is we're going to sign Lavia and we're going to sign a defender. And I think that's right.
Jones could be part of the six as well.
Yeah. No, I think
Europa League.
I think it'll be Lavia, Bacetic, Thiago, McAllister, Jones with your Fudge. It isn't ideal. I think that they either reckon Lavia is that good, or they can't get no one else of a quality, and they're not willing to do the Amrabat stopgap thing.
I think, but the thing is, on that, I still think that's a possibility because we're looking at it going, I just don't think you bother your arse buying. There's no rush on that one in the same way because he's not good. That player's probably not good enough to start anyway. Yeah. So I think it's weighing up the balance of things. They know they want Lavia. He's the plan. The Lavia is part of the plan and has been part of the plan. Having to make a decision now over what else you do, they're compromising. And it looks like instead of going and getting an 8 or 9 out of 10, one-size-fits-all solution, which I don't think was ever necessarily... I think it was the plan last year with Tchouaméni, but I don't think it was the plan this time around. They now got a Fabinho who is on his best, probably slipped from a 10 to maybe a 9 or an 8.5 out of 10, but as worse, he's a 6. And Lavia, because he's so young, is a 7 out of 10 player. If you need to go and get another 7 out of 10 midfielder with a bit more experience, some of them will just crop up in the next month or so. As the window goes, when footy comes back and teams become a bit desperate, you might be able to push the button on Amrabat in the last week of the window. You've got enough there to keep you ticking over. Nothing else better materialised. And then you go, all right, fuck it. Well, that's when you go and get, you know, it might have been Paulinho, or it might have been an Amrabat or whomever. You know, Wilfred Ndidi, you know, I saw his name come up a lot because we played him yesterday. That's my thinking on it. They're trying to remain flexible, but they've reached the point now where it's flexibility becomes folly if we're starting a season without a recognised number six at the football club. Is my hope on it anyway. Defence, we promised this, let's do it. We're still short, aren't we?
Yeah, we're still one short. I think we're
aware though.
I think it's someone who can Kwanzaa, like that left hand side.
Left-hand side,
I think he's not ready yet. I think he could do with another loan. He's physically ready,
yeah.
But you can tell there's reading. He's got a bit to learn. Like there's no question about his physicality. I was saying we had Neil Jones on for Journal Insight. It was like when you think of like Billy Cometio, Rhys Williams, Sepp Vandenberg, they look like a drink of water dressed up. You know what I mean? They were skinny. Like they need to fill out. You know, he's got the frame and the physique and the power and stuff. He probably just needs to go and get some more game time experience. Nat Phillips didn't even go on the tour. He looks like he's probably finally going to get the move he wants. So, I think Liverpool will be looking at Matip's replacement, but bringing him in a year early. potentially some. I think they'd like them to be left sided if they could. Like, mm-hmm. Colwell was the, well, he was the interested one before obviously Chelsea decided he wasn't for sale. But Matip looked better than he had. But I've still got just a bit of concerns about him. But I feel like, again, it's hard without knowing the plan, because like when Trent hasn't played and Kostas has played, Kostas has effectively been, they flipped it and he's been the inverted into midfield kind of
thing.
He's
not been an understudy for Robbo. He's let Quansah be that understudy, which tells you, I think, and it, well, you can't know this because if we had more defensive midfielders, we might have seen something completely different. That becomes the X factor, or the unknown rather, on this. But it does say to me that, yeah, the left-sided, because Robbo's not a right fit for it. He's fine, you know, and he's been doing a good job. And I like the fact that he's still getting up and supporting the attack. Well, Gomez did a good job of that on the flip side. That was Gomez's best game against Leicester as well. It's just, it's a gamble to let Quansah do it. He might be. This is my problem with all this, is that these young players actually, you know, if we're going to make a case and go, well, Lavia, if he's good enough at 19, throw him in and trust him, but then not make the same case for Quansah and
not make
the same case.
One's played Premier League footy and one's played League One.
Yeah, Bristol Rovers.
Again, what's happened with Conor Bradley? He's injured. Is he the fullback? Because if he's Trent's deputy, and when, to be fair to Bradley, when he's played in pre-season, they've let him be the midfielder, you know, the inverted one. Does that mean Gomez is just primarily a centre-half now, and then are you comfortable with four? There's a lot of... These aren't like first 11 problems. There's a DM that people need to put in their first 11.
It's a first 11 problem if we start the season like last season, when Nat Phillips is playing centre-half.
Six injuries in a week, yeah.
That's why the DM is priority one, then centre-back needs to be down the line.
Yeah. I'm happy for Quansah to stick around, if I'm honest. You know, I think there's a Nat Phillips role in that squad, and I think the way we've shifted it, we need another centre-half as well. Now, if you're playing two at the back, you're up at four at the back, if you're playing two centre-halves at any given time, I think you need four's fine, and then a random extra body as a break glass solution. We've got that right now, because Quansah is just Phillips, but I would argue that if Tsimikas isn't being trusted to play as an understudy to Robertson, then we need another one as well, because we're not playing with fullbacks. So fullbacks are centre backs now. So we need either more midfielders, or we need more centre halves to be able to cover that. Because if you're playing three at the back in possession, we are short. We've got enough for those two teams just about from we've seen, but there was nothing else beneath that. There was no one left on the bench who was coming on to play in defence for us. Yeah. It's just weird that there's not been more.
I think the Colville's the only one, wasn't he? But like you said, when that deal became apparent, it wasn't going to happen, even though Chelsea have still signed centre-halves, which is mad in itself. But yeah, when it became apparent that Colville wasn't, there hasn't been any sort of alternatives to that. But I really like Quansah. I think in an ideal world, we would sign someone further down the line in terms of development, which Colville obviously does tick those boxes, and Quansah would go get a Championship loan, because I mentioned earlier, Bristol Rovers last year, who were really impressed with him, and he had a good time there, but he does need more football at a slightly higher level before he's part of our squad, in my opinion. But because you've mentioned Phillips there, and he's never really, he went to spend time in Germany and stuff, handy in the Bundesliga too, and played his football there, but he was always older than Quansah. Even when he came back for that derby, he was like 23 by that point, you know what I mean? So he was more experienced just in an age profile wise. But the left sided stuff is really interesting. I do think we need one. It was fascinating to see Robertson be so adventurous from that role. And I always go on about it, because I remember him saying back end last season, they still get forward, and I just think, you can't. You can against Leicester when we're dominating the ball and they're bang average, because they were for large parts of that game. That's fine. But against Chelsea away, Robbo ain't going to be able to be bombing forwards. And it's also fascinating that we haven't seen Tsimikas play in sort of the left-sided centre-back role we've gone to. He's been in midfield, like you say. So, God forbid, touch wood, Robertson gets injured, all of a sudden, can Trent then not go into midfield because Tsimikas is doing it from the other side? So we do need a backup, because otherwise we're stopping what we get best out of Trent, because we need Tsimikas to do it, because we're not trusting him to do the other bomb.
Or you're doing it randomly. You ask a random winger or midfielder, or, you know what I mean? Like you're starting to have to create random solutions to the problems. I do think it's interesting the way that they've kind of fixed the defence across, you know, the two teams. Mm. We've seen a bit of mix and matching with the midfield. We've seen a little bit, you know, the eights in particular. We've seen a mix and matching with the attack. But the defence, the only slight change was, of course, with Conor Bradley not being in there, Trent going back to the inverted fullback against Leicester. But it's interesting that we've kept Quansah, Matip, Gomez together as a thing. I just can't, you know, I'd have liked to have seen, maybe we'll do the against Bayern or Darmstadt, and maybe that'll, I think this might be the indicator as to whether we're buying someone or not. If maybe we see Quanta start alongside Van Dijk and Konate and see what that, get a little look at what that looks like, or do we experiment with something else? Because last week we were going, well, Gakpo had played nothing but eight in pre-season up until that point. Was that a key leaning towards something? We haven't tried anything particularly mad with the defence, but...
I think as well, I think if we bring someone in my opinion, it makes someone redundant. If we bring a right centre-back in, it puts Matt's position in the squad in real question because Gomez is flexible. If we bring a left-footed centre-half in, what Simicas's features?
That's what I wouldn't be shocked if Simicas isn't here.
I think that's the simple. If we need to raise a bit of money, which we always seem to do, and you need to, and you've got Phillips as well. If Phillips and Simicas go, you might have a pot of money there then to go right there. There's you start on budget for a defender.
Yeah,
and I think that's a big factor in
cost
this.
Cost us if we're playing this new thing and this is the way to go. There's no room for Simicas in it because that's how I like the way it works. Is you do what we have been doing. You could say, in the Europa League, Gomez plays right back, Matip and another centre-back plays, and then Simicas is the one who becomes the inverted. You just flip it, and he's the inverted left-back, the way Zinchenko does it. So that's one option, I suppose. But
And he was fine, actually. That was his second half against Leicester. That was the best he's looked in it.
And he's been training on it.
He just doesn't have what Trent has, does he?
Yeah.
No, it's so silly. That's the most obvious statement of all time, because Trent is an absolute freak. But you're right, we've got what we have over Man City, and again, they did this with Josh, what we have over Man City and Arsenal when they play this system is their lads going in there are fine, but they're not Trent Alexander-Arnold.
No, they're not.
So what we lose by it not being Trent and it being a Timacast, it might be Bradley and he hasn't got it either, but we want it to be Trent as much as humanly possible. We want it to be Trent. If suddenly it's Timacast, it's just not the same.
Yeah, no, it is. It's a big question mark on this, and it's mad because it feels a bit like, I don't know, there's like we're treating these one after the other. You know what I mean? We're trying to play match pairs by holding the cards as a deck rather than have them sort of spread out.
He can do that.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And we've got to do one deal before we can even contemplate doing the next one. And I get the anxiety that's creeping into people over it because we've made bad missteps in recent years in the transfer market. Just got this underlying feeling that there must be something going on. You know what I mean? They've either come to a decision.
They've bidding for player.
Yeah.
So they're there or thereabouts.
But I mean, the Lavia stuff's fine. But that's, you know, why can't, when the phone gets put down and that, it's not like a constant live stream conversation between Schmadker and Southampton, is it? You know what I mean? When he finishes that call, can he not pick the phone up and speak to someone about a defender while he's there? Unless there's, again, it just leads me to believe that there's either they're waiting for an opportunity, a window of opportunity to open for them in the coming weeks. And look, let's be honest, in the short term, we can get by with what we've got till the end of the window. It's not desperate for another centre-half before Chelsea. We are desperate for a six, but we're not desperate for another centre-half now. It would be ideal to get them all in and done, but also we know that we want to get this window right. Mm-hmm. They can't afford, they haven't got the room to spunk budget, but they also need to make sure that they're getting the right body in. I do wonder whether there's just something going on, like they've got their eyes on one or two and they're waiting for situations to develop. That's my speculation.
The fact that it might be Klopp. At the moment, he's in the middle of a pre-season tour and a pre-season training camp with his team. He might be like, let me have a look because I've got a few lads coming back into the fold. I need to see who's developed. Bobby Clark's developed these in the squad now. So he might, his position in Klopp's mind might be different than it was in May. Same with Kwanzaa, same with X, Y and Z player, Bradley, for instance. So it might just be I just need to take stock. Let's get Lavia sorted. And then after, when I'm back and we're not leaving the country again, we can then say, right, I think it's that position or it's that position we need to get. I think that's important as well because the plan might not already be set. It might be fluid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's going to be, it's just tough, isn't it? Because I hate being this because we talk about it and we speculate on it. It feels like making like excuses for stuff, but I remain of the opinion that it's trying to get your head into what they're thinking because there's conversations happening. They've not just gone, but done. They're not daft. They see the same things that we see, but they see more as well. You know what I mean? There's far more data, far more knowledge, and there'll be pages and pages and gigabytes of data on terabytes on what their real thoughts are and stuff. But it feels weird because from the outside, when you're without that information, with less than 2 weeks away from the season start, and we haven't got a fit, recognised number six at the football club. And right now, our left-sided defensive options in our first-choice defence are a left-back, a flying, industrious left-back in Andy Robertson, a kid centre-half who's only played League One, and Kostas Tsimikas, who's a fucking nutcase, who is clearly being pushed more towards playing midfield than playing centre-half. So it is...
Work to be done.
Yeah, I mean... The 1-1, again, this is pure speculation. I hate speculating because it gets people excited, and then when it doesn't come off, you get naturally disappointed. But there are two players that we've been linked with who can play in positions that we need, that we're going to be going up against this week in the final Singapore friendly game.
If we sign Kimmich or... Who's the one?
Pavard.
Yeah. I reckon there's more chance of me.
I don't think the Pavard stuff's out of the realms of possibility.
Well, if it is for him, he wants to play.
Yeah, it's a good.
The reason he's leaving behind, he wants to play, and he wants to play centre back, doesn't he, as well? That's the thing with him. And yeah, that's just one of those where I think Liverpool aren't going to do it. I think that whoever they sign a centre back, I wouldn't be shocked if they were a kid like 20, 21, 22. Like,
I think they will.
Well, we'll sign someone who's ideally you want to sign someone who's 22, 23. I think, you know, yeah, go do Canate again, you know, in that way you've got room to.
Well, the Palace kid, but obviously he's
Mark Gahey. Yeah, I do. Well, Gahey is a shout. I mentioned him earlier on my show. Actually, I do think, and I might be stupid in saying this, I do think, even though everything points towards Chelsea never selling him, I do wonder whether we are just waiting for Colwell, which might be foolish. It might be
How
stupid.
How long's his contract?
I think he's got a year left, and they are trying to tie him down to a new deal.
But if he says no,
but he is, the only reason I say it is because he is so perfect for what we want, age, positionally, what he offers. He's Kwanzaa 4 years down the line.
He's that deal is the Alisson deal for me, and it's like, you know, okay, Kwanzaa's probably a better centre half than Danny Ward was a goalie, maybe, maybe, probably not. But in fairness, you know, it's like, but that's my point about this. And then for the next couple of weeks, barring unforeseen circumstances, we're reasonably well stocked in that. You can afford to hold on a little bit and see if that happens, because that's the thing. Right now, he's too expensive, and they're not obviously 100% certain that he wants to join us, I guess. Yeah. If that was to change, they might be able to pounce on that, and then you've got your first choice target sorted. If we bottle it now and go all in on Gray, for example, at 40 or 45 or 50 or whatever he's going to cost, that means you've got no chance of signing Levi Colwill anytime soon.
So you'd almost rather him sign a contract at Chelsea, be off the table, or say, I'm not signing a contract. Exactly. None of this sort of flux and... But it's a Poch factor, and he's just come in.
Someone here saying he's got 2 years left on his contract. I don't think it's as pressing as the 1 year, but it's that thing of, either way, player power will play a role in this. Chelsea just signed another centre-half, haven't they?
Yeah.
And they have got loads of players. Again, there's like I think Chelsea are key to this whole transfer window. They still hold far too many bodies. They've been quite smart in what they've moved on so far.
And they're trying to still sign more.
But yeah, I mean, literally, that's the point. They've let Kai Havertz go, and they've let Mendy go, and they've let, you know, there's a bunch of players go, but they've signed three or four as well on top of that to come in. So net, they're not actually loads better off in terms of volume of bodies than they were at the start of the window. So maybe there's a little bit in that, certainly. Let us know your thoughts on anything we've discussed in that regard in the comments section, please do. If you want to continue these discussions, then join us for our live shows during the week on our YouTube channel, Half Twelves, is where we're here discussing most of these things as well. And we're going to be picking up on Chelsea, the rest of the big teams in the Premier League, and doing a bit of a state of play across the transfer market in the Bias Transfer Podcast. That's going to follow on live on Redmen Plus pretty much 20 minutes or so after this one. So come and join us over there for that one. We're going to be looking at what's been done by the club so far, what needs to be done, and just see if we can have a general sense of the overriding state of play in the transfer market for the Premier League clubs. Hope to see you over there. Buy a Bobby Firmino book is what I'll leave you on. Thank you so much, gentlemen. Absolute pleasure. See you all soon. Bye. Hey, our brand new book has landed. It is Bobby Firmino, Best in the World, an A4 format, prestige, limited edition book featuring incredible insights into the life and times of a cop icon, taking it back to his days, his boyhood days in Brazil, his transfer to Hoffenheim, and a season-by-season guide to his time on Merseyside. Follow the story of Bobby Firmino. Get great stats, insights, quotes. You're going to see fantastic photos from his times at the Reds and unique artwork from a whole host of incredible Liverpool artists as well. It is a very limited edition, limited run, one and done. Grab one while you can. We've even got a special author signed edition available as well and even more limited quantities. Head to redmenmerch.com. You are sure to be thrilled and marvel at this wonderful creation of ours. Yes, head to redmanmerch.com. Grab one today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.